Gamey 33 is here, but now we know the full programme for the season, we finalise our strategy. We deep dive on Arsenal and Liverpool, and the big question of this week's pod is, will Jules ever join us? Hello and welcome back to the FPL pod. A slightly different FPL pod this week because morning Julien Leroux. Nope. Morning Sam Bonfield.
I'm here, Kel. Good morning.
Yeah. Jules, well, probably if you follow Jules on social media, if you've got to know him through this podcast, he is the busiest man in football media. And on Wednesday night, yep, PSG played. It was a big game. So of course, he was there. Was meant to be getting on the Eurostar this morning. We pushed back our record. We all moved around our days. And now his Eurostar is delayed. So we're hoping, aren't we, that at some point Sammy joins us.
Are we hoping that, or are we hoping for a nice, peaceful, quiet record just you and me, Kel? I'm not quite sure what I prefer. No, I am joking, of course. Like, we are hoping he turns up.
Yeah, because he probably wants to gloat. He probably wants to talk about Porro returning and all those kind of things. And I'm sure he'll be here at some point. But for now, we'll crack on without him and we'll be just fine. Let's start then with the announcement of the double game week that has been confirmed. Heading into the last game week, we were told, finally, that double game week 35 will include Chelsea and Spurs. Spurs will face Arsenal at home and Chelsea away. Chelsea will play Aston Villa away and Spurs at home. Then, as if that wasn't exciting enough, we also finally had confirmation. This is what I was really looking forward to, of double game week 37. That means that the final three matches have been rescheduled. Chelsea against Brighton, Spurs against Man City, Manchester United against Newcastle have all been added. Sam, this means, doesn't it, that we finally know the full lay of the land?
Yeah, we know everything now and it's perfect, isn't it? Because these are all where we were expecting them to go, right? So I don't think there's any major shocks there. Maybe we were a bit torn as to whether Spurs and Chelsea would fit into game week 35 or 36. But the fact that we now have that definite news means that you can really start planning out. And while Jules isn't here, I'll tell you this. There's two pages in my notebook now, which are just dedicated to the potential transfers in and out each week. Whoa. Between now and the end of the season, so that I know exactly what I'm doing. And partly, I wanted to tell you that before he comes, because the transfers I make have to be slightly different to the ones he makes.
To catch him.
We need to catch Kel. So suddenly, there's that extra bit of fun, I guess, that comes with knowing where everything goes and going, right, if everything goes to plan and there's no injuries, and of course we can't always bank on that, but if we get to that stage, then we can go, these are the transfers I'm going to make. And this is where I kind of feel that I have a bit of an advantage over him, because there's absolutely no way he's thinking that far in advance.
I think he's feeling the pressure a bit, you know, as well, because he's still scoring high, but because of where he is in the world, his high in comparison to us isn't as high as the people around him, is it? So I think he's getting a bit trickier for him. Not that he would admit that.
Absolutely. And I think, for me, when I look at him and I think that's a decent score, obviously the green arrows are smaller that you can get at that point, because you've got smaller to climb. But the potential for a red arrow is so much bigger, because there's so many more places that you can fall, I guess. So, and it's really hard. Like, I've been there a lot of times in previous seasons where you're sitting inside the top 10K and all you want to do is have a really good end to the season, because the season's gone so well. And that added pressure that you put on yourself then, not to make a mistake, make the wrong transfer. I think sometimes you second guess everything that you're doing. And I'm pretty sure that on Saturday afternoon, you know, I checked his team as soon as the deadline passed and you could log back in and see it, and saw that he'd done Madison to Foden. And of course, then Foden was benched. And I was thinking, oh, if Foden doesn't come off the bench, that could be problematic. And if Madison then does something, but he got lucky with that one, and thank goodness he kept Porro, because that would have been, can you imagine how much he would have ranted if he'd have come on
here
having
sold
him? I'm
also wondering how he felt watching that game in Real Madrid though, when Foden limped off as well, because there'll be a lot of people, obviously we don't at this stage on Thursday morning have an update on that, but that's going to be a big problem for a lot of managers. I just wanted to update people on our mini league, because you're talking there about catching him. I'm 75 points behind him, and Sam, if I'm honest, I'd given up on catching him. I think 75 points, even though I've got a wild card and a bench boost, feels quite a lot. You're 106 points behind him. Mm-hmm. Is that not an unassailable lead? Do you think you can get him?
I think it would be foolish to think it's likely, but I definitely don't think it's over. I think if he has a bad week or two, and I have a good week or two. At one point this weekend, I genuinely thought that things were going to go well for me because he'd benched 8 Nori, I'd played him, and 8 Nori
looked
like... It did
go well though, 70 points.
Yeah, I had a really good week, a nice big green arrow. I was really happy with it. In fact, we all had green arrows over here this week, which was lovely. But at one point I was looking at his team thinking the decision to bench 8 Nori, Gusto didn't play, so we came off the bench, which frustrated me. I had Sun, and Sun, I sat there watching that game thinking, if he can get a goal, and he so nearly did, was it not for the keeper right at the death? He so nearly had that goal. That would have been a, 10, maybe even more points off of his rank in my benefit. So I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely, but I kind of love chasing, and I like that staging point. So at the moment it's perfect with you because you're at the point where I think
you can catch me.
I can catch you. And so I'm looking at you thinking, if I can catch you, once I get to you, if he's had a couple of slightly lesser weeks than I have, then the gap from me to him will be less. So then I can get there. So that's how I view it at the moment, because sometimes with overall rank, it's harder because you kind of go, I want to finish in the top 100K, 10K, whatever it is. But in a mini league, you can see the difference so much easier, and it's easier to use that as motivation, I find anyway.
So Jules is on 2,011 points. That means he is 10,785 in the world. So where we're saying he's not had a good few weeks, he's still pretty good. I'm at 1,000. I wish I was at 1,000. I'm at 136,235. I've really fallen in the last few weeks. As you said, I did have a green arrow this week. My overall points, 1,936. Sam's overall points, 1,905. So only 31 points behind me. Overall rank of 273,011. So yeah, you actually rolled your transfer as well, didn't you? And you captained Salah in the end, and that proved to be a very wise decision. Myself and Jules went for Cole Palmer.
Yeah. So on Thursday, we obviously sat here on this pod and we spoke, and we were all captaining Palmer, and I was on Palmer at that point. And then I watched the game on the Thursday evening, because obviously we had those two fixtures still to play out, didn't we? The Liverpool and the Chelsea and Manchester United game. And honestly, I sat there and I thought, both of these are really good options, both Palmer and Salah. And in the end, it was just if I go for Salah and Jules and you captain Palmer, I might just give myself some space. I might give myself a bit of a breathing space. And that was what it came down to in the end. The fact that the Manchester United defence collapsed in the way that it did at the end of that game, and the hope that you two stuck on Palmer and it just would give me a little bit of an advantage. But I flip-flopped all morning on the Saturday. I kept moving it backwards and forwards between Palmer and Salah because it was so hard to pick between the two of them. And in the end, the actual right answer was Saka, wasn't it? But of course, no one was going there because there was a doubt over his injury.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm still not so convinced on Saka now, watching him at the end of that Bayern Munich game the other day. But anyway, we'll talk about all that kind of thing very shortly. Just an update on the FPL Pod Mini League. Stefan is still at the top. He actually sold Ollie Watkins for Alexander Isak this week. Would have been a real disappointment, but a move that I would... If he'd have said to me he was going to do it, I mean, not that he would be taking my advice, because I'm way behind him. But on paper, that looks like a brilliant move, doesn't it, Sam? Really?
Absolutely, yeah. You can absolutely see why you do that, wouldn't you? Like, Isak, great fixtures, double coming up, Watkins, no fixtures, no double fixtures anyway. Mm. And you just kind of look at it and you go, yeah, I could see why that's workable. Plus, saves you some budget. You can reinvest that budget elsewhere. That would have really hurt this week when that happened. I hate when transfers like that go.
Yeah, me too. He did captain Erling Haaland though, which was of course a brilliant move. And by the way, Awise, he's fourth in the league, 12 points behind Stefan. It's really exciting at the top of that league. Really enjoying seeing how it plays out. And Burke and Villa also sit second and third. They both sold Foden this week. Burke brought in Diaz. What a transfer in. And Villa actually brought in De Bruyne. Another brilliant transfer in. They got 80 and 83 points respectively. And they got it right with the armband too, captaining Salah. Okay, then let's talk a little bit more about those double game weeks that we mentioned, 35 and 37. This has made it very interesting, Sam, hasn't it? Particularly when it comes to Chelsea and Spurs. Does it change our plans with them, would you say?
It depends on what you've been doing, I guess, with Spurs, doesn't it? Because now that we know that the first double follows immediately after the blank,
yeah,
you do have to have a bit of a plan in place, because the blank in 34 means that some managers, if you want to bench boost there, will look at that and go, well, I have to sell my Spurs assets then. Mm-hmm. But then you'll be looking the week after and going, But if I sell Son or I sell Brennan Johnson or I sell Udogie or Poro or whoever it is that you have, can I actually then bring them back in straight afterwards to prep for that double? And given that they've then got another double 2 game weeks later in 37, you haven't got a lot of time for moving Spurs players around. So I think it does change things slightly. Had it been another week, had it been in 36, I think we'd have seen more people selling Son, selling Brennan Johnson into 34. Now that we know that the double immediately follows the blank, I think more people will be inclined to hold some, which is, it's changed my plans. I was kind of pondering on, do I swap some for maybe Havertz for 34, swap him back again for 36. Actually, now I'm looking at it and thinking, I'm just going to hold Son till the end.
Is that what you're thinking? And all of a sudden, Sam, do you not think it looks quite clever as well from those of us that have held our wild cards?
I think...
I mean, it's pure luck, actually, because now I can bring in Spurs players and not have to worry because I can get rid of them.
Yeah. And so the interesting thing I think for you is if you have held your wild card and you're going to play it ahead of 35, does it actually make more sense to try and bench boost in 34? Because the doubles in 34, there's more of them, and the single game week fixtures are slightly nicer in 34 than they are in 37.
That's my plan at the moment. Mm. Yeah, when I was looking at my team, the likes of Anthony Gordon's got a nice fixture that week, so I'd want his points. And even like a Cole Palmer that may have Arsenal away, but
yeah,
there's not many teams that I, like, don't get me wrong, if I didn't have a bench boost, I'd probably bench him that week because he doesn't have a double and his fixture's difficult. But actually, if I've got the bench boost, I'm more than happy for him being one of my players because it feels like at the moment he could return against anyone. So yeah, I'm leaning towards the bench boost in 34, wild card in 35.
I can see that, because the other thing with a bench boost in 37 is that it's towards the back end of the season, right? And you never know what's going to happen with some of the teams, if they're going to be, as we like to say, on the beach, if their season's over, you know, if they are trying out some new things, maybe we see some rotation. Like I always think that a bench boost that late is kind of risky because there is always an element of doubt as to whether everyone gets a start by the time you get to that point. But I think for me, it makes sense because I'm not going to sell my Spurs assets. Well, actually, I might sell one of them, but Son, I'm not going to sell.
Don't give by some chance, any chance?
Yeah. he's much more difficult. And Poro even Poro after the goal. Although I am, weirdly, Kelly, I am thinking about bringing Van de Ven back. Probably not
this week.
Because
you love him.
I mean, that is true. But no, it's not. It's because he's so cheap and because he doubles in 37. And we know he's going to play in 37 across both of those two doubles. So I am, and that gives me the perfect amount of money to do what else I want to do to the rest of my team. So yeah. I am kind of tempted with him because it saves obviously 0.6 on Udogie. But generally speaking, I'm not a big fan of the Spurs defence, even though they're scoring goals. I just think that the clean sheets don't look likely in the coming weeks. But I think if you have a wild card and you're playing it in 35, have a look at whether it's possible to bench boost in 34, because it might be, I mean, it's completely the wrong way around, really. You'd ideally want a wild card before you bench boost.
Yeah, which was always my plan, but I don't, like you said there, for all of the reasons we've just said, it makes a lot more sense to do it the other way around, doesn't it?
It does. It does make sense. So I think it's worth having a little look at that. And then
also, I'd like to add in there, though, it does depend on how your team's set up. Like my team is quite nicely already set up for the 34. Not quite as many doublers, but a few, like 2 game weeks ago, I worked out how many transfers I'd got and which teams I'd target. So for example, I was going to bring in, I mean, he's got an injury doubt now, but Ait Nouri. I never thought, I didn't WhatsApp you this, but I was going to. You guys, we spoke last week. You're very much in my head now. I think I made the transfer at 10:46. I got rid of Moreno and brought in Ait Nouri.
I was like,
I'm going to want him for the double. I'm going to want him in a couple of weeks. I prefer his fixture this week to Moreno's. Why would I not do it now? I was trying to hold 2 transfers for next week because I always like doing that. Mm-hmm. Because then you can get 2 transfers or you can take a -4 to get 3 and really change your team. But I actually got the fear of you guys having him and brought him in. And I'm really glad I did actually. I'm not going to be glad if he's out. But it is a case of, I was like, well, actually, my team is set up okay. And with those transfers I've got, I can be quite happy with my 34 team. If I was to wildcard before then, my team wouldn't look greatly different.
No.
So...
No, I think for you now, there's no point in wildcarding earlier. I think for most people, if you've still got the wildcard, the 35 wildcard makes a lot of sense. You can invest in Spurs and Chelsea because obviously they double in 35 and then again in 37, but you can also go heavier on Manchester City. You can go heavy on Brighton if you want to, Newcastle, Manchester United. There's options there that you can look at. if you do it earlier, you have to kind of do what Jules and I have done, which is hedge your bets and go for some for 34 and then some for 37, knowing that then transfers build up the 34s and then change out to build up the 37s later. So I love this point of the season. This for me is the bit of the season where you have to have your head in the game. You have to be really aware of what's going on. Champions League, Europa League, Conference League, that's all playing a part in terms of potential rotation, potential concerns around the minutes that players might get. This is the bit of the season where people that listen to this podcast and people that are actively engaged in the game can really make some good transfer decisions and some good moves that will get them back ahead in mini leagues.
Let's just talk a little bit. So I feel like we've spoken a lot about 34 and 35 and what potentially to do with Spurs in particular. What about game week 37? So I mentioned it before, the six teams that play twice, Brighton, Chelsea, Man City, Man United, Newcastle and Spurs. Who would you say has the best fixtures there that you'd be targeting, Sam?
So on paper, Chelsea do. They've got a game against Nottingham Forest and then a game against Brighton. And you would expect from an attacking perspective that there should be goals in both of those two games. I'm not sure about clean sheets, particularly against Nottingham Forest, because Chris Wood seems to be in the form of his life right now.
I couldn't believe it when he scored again the other day. I was like, we talked about the fact that, are we sleeping on him? And yep, honestly, if you're listening to this and you bought him in a few weeks ago, fair play.
Yeah. And actually, when you're looking for a third forward, he's also a really great cheap option. But of course, because Nottingham Forest don't have a double game week, I think a lot of people have looked elsewhere. And because Munez is slightly cheaper as well. So if you were trying to save budget, maybe you've gone a bit further down. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that there's a clean sheet there for Chelsea, but I certainly think that that's a nice double game week.
If you had
a
gusto, you'd hold him, wouldn't you?
Because of the attacking absolutely potential. Yeah. And I think, you know, we don't seem to have any threat of Reece James coming back anytime soon either. Mm. And, you know, obviously he missed out in game week 32, which will have annoyed a lot of managers. But
me.
Yeah, I mean, he was on my bench, so actually it didn't bother me too much. But a lot of managers like yourself, Kelly, did want him to play this time around. And his attacking returns, I think, are what you play him for. So you definitely have him for those two. Newcastle's fixtures are really nice as well. They've got Brighton and then Manchester United. And so I think that in that double game week, there's a real opportunity to look to heavily invest in Newcastle. Having Gordon and probably Isak as a double up does seem to, in my mind, make a lot of sense. That's how I'm looking to head my team as we head into the game week 37 double. Spurs have got polar opposites in that double. They've got Burnley and they've got Manchester City, but they are one of only two clubs to have two home fixtures in that double game week. So no travelling for them, which is obviously quite nice.
Yeah.
Man City don't tend to like coming to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium either. So might be some good opportunities there. But yeah, with Burnley as well, I think that's worth a look.
The piece is over.
Oh dear.
Hi Jules, nice of you to
Hello,
join
guys.
Us.
Hello guys. So sorry, my Eurostar was really messed up this morning.
We'll forgive you. Just this once.
As bad as PSG were, the Eurostar was as bad.
Yes, other rail providers are also available. Jules might be using those next time. Jules, we've already spoken about you at length. I'd listen back to the top of the podcast if I was you, by the way.
I wouldn't. Oh
my, what happened again?
No. Sam.
I had some thoughts.
Sam's got her eyes on you is all I'm saying. I'd listen back if I was you. Just quickly, we're talking about the confirmation of all the doubles. We've gone through 34 and 35. It's like when someone's late for school and you have to kind of catch them up and teach them everything really quickly. We've also just spoke about 37, but quickly we'll dive in and say, how did you feel like your game week went? We've already spoken about the fact that you might be a little bit concerned now that you brought in Foden and of course you got rid of Maddison.
Yeah, of course. Especially with Foden not playing in game week 32, and I don't think he would play in game week 33. For all the Foden owners, the fact that he got a knock at the Bernabeu on Tuesday night, the fact that they play again next week, the second leg at the Etihad, the fact that Kevin De Bruyne didn't play at all in Madrid, you could easily see De Bruyne starting and Foden being on the bench, maybe not involved at all and staying home, resting for the second leg against Real Madrid. So I brought him at the worst time possible, not knowingly, obviously, but I think it's a worry for all Foden owners. I think that he might not play a single minute this weekend for Manchester City. But the week went well, 68 points. I was a bit lucky.
We mentioned that.
What? The lack of luck of the game week before. It's okay. It's all about planning, talent and vision.
Well, I'm really glad this has completely thrown me off what we were talking about now. This is what happens when someone's late. I now know what it's like when you're a teacher at a school and someone's late and it kind of throws your lesson into disarray. Because the whole way through, Jules going to bring stuff up and we're going to be like, have you spoken about that, Jules?
Yeah. No, I'll be disciplined. I'll be disciplined.
Yeah, right. It's not a phrase I use when it comes to you. So sorry in advance to any listeners if there is a bit of repetition, but you've lived this roller coaster of whether Jules is going to arrive or not with us. So hopefully you understand. Just quickly, Sam, going back to where we were at with transfers in and teams to target for 37.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's very different because of 34. Do you need a plan almost as soon as 34 starts? Is that what you're going to have? Like already be planning those transfers for 37?
I think you need a plan now. Like you need a plan now for how you use your 33 transfer to make sure that 34 goes well. And then you need to be on it straight after 34 because obviously there's the doubling 35. You need to make sure you've invested in Spurs and Chelsea for that one. And then you'll need to make sure that you're heavily invested in whichever of those six teams you want to be for game week 37. Now, of course, it helps that Chelsea and Spurs have the two doubles. So you invest in them for 35, you've still got them for 37, which is great. But yeah, you certainly need to have, you need to have a plan for what your transfers might look like. Things change. Because people get injured, people get rested, but have a plan in place and be flexible with it, but know roughly the players that you want to bring in each week. And sometimes, so like I, for this week, I want to, the two transfers I'd like to make, one of them I feel is a bit of a risk. So I think I might just make one of them and then roll the second transfer again into next week. So I've got two for the week after. And it's just having that kind of thought process that says, am I leaving myself in the best position possible to make sure that each of the doubles goes as best as it can?
What plans have you got, Jules? This is your area of expertise, of course.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the plan is to write down already your team for game week 37, for example. Okay, 35 is important because of the Chelsea and Spurs double, but what team ideally would you like for 37? You write that down, see how many players you already have in your current team, because you will still have a Haaland, for example, even if he doesn't double in 37, and see how many players you need to get to for that ideal team in 37, if it's possible, if only half of those players are possible, a third, two-thirds, I think it's probably the way to go because you still have enough time. You know, let's not forget, this is game week 33 to go to 37, especially if you've planned already and prepared well for 34 and for that double, you could be in a good position for 37 because really when you look at it, there's some tough games for most of those teams that double in 37 anyway. So who would you realistically go for compared to the players who only have one game in that game week, but you know are going to return, for example? So actually your team for 37 might not change that dramatically compared to the one that you're already on it or the one that you will have for 34. So I think it's quite exciting, to be fair, to do. And I don't think it would be too difficult either.
Okay, so I've already revealed what I'm going to do with my chips. I'm going to be bench boosting, I think, in 34 and then wild carding in 35. You know me, Jules, why change the habit of a lifetime? Leave the wild card right.
No, but that sounds good, Kev.
No, actually, I said to Sam earlier, it almost looks like I've been quite clever, but
genius.
I haven't. I've stumbled into it. Yeah, like a couple of weeks ago, I realised I was going to play ahead of 34. Jules, Sam and I have already spoken about the merits of, normally it would make sense to wildcard before a big double, but actually my team's set up quite nicely, so it makes a lot more sense to wait until 35. So that's where I'm using my two remaining chips. Sam, where are you at with your chips and when you're going to play them? You've just got bench boost, is that right?
Yeah, I think I'm still going to play it in 37. To be honest, it's a risk playing it that late, but I'm going to have Sonny sitting on my bench in 34, so can't play it then. Did ponder on playing it in 35 just because I'll have my Spurs and my Chelsea assets, and there's a number of players that I'd quite like for that week that have good fixtures that I might end up having to bench. So it's possible it might go in 35, but probably 37.
What about you, Jules?
Yeah, I think 35 sounds good. Again, it gives you a bit more time to make sure that your bench is good. For example, like me, if you still have Lascelles, because I just didn't really need to transfer him out and bring in somebody else in because he was the third sub and he could stay there. I had other positions to strengthen and stuff to do with it, with the free transfers. So between now and 37, that gives you more time to make sure that your full squad is ready for the bench boost. So for example, if you have a player's long-term injury like Lascelles or others, then you have time to get rid of them while still strengthening your team for the game with 34, 35, etc., etc. So I think 37 is a good time to play. You can play before if you feel like you've got the right players, obviously, but 37 sounds pretty good.
Sam, if managers have other chips left, so we're talking triple captain and free hit in particular, I'm quite envious if managers have them. How would you be playing those chips?
So the free hit makes sense in 34, I think, because it allows you to keep your Spurs and your Chelsea assets. It allows you to have a really nice team for that one. I think if you've already got assets that you're happy with for 34, though, so if you've already trebled up on Liverpool and Arsenal, then you might think, actually, is there much value in playing the free hit then? I love playing the free hit in game week 38. Like, I sort of wish I'd just kept mine and played it then, because it gives you the opportunity to go a bit rogue on the final day of the season, which is always fun. So it can go there. I think the triple captain and the bench boost, if you've got both of them, then I'd put the bench boost in 35 if you've got a full bench, and put the triple captain in 37, because the triple captaincy, like, there's definitely some picks in there that you could comfortably put it on. And I think you've got less risk of those guys at that point being rotated than you have maybe your bench being rotated.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. What do you think, Jules?
Yeah, I mean, I think 37 also, just simply on the fact that they might not be, you might have to be very careful how you play 37, really, because like we said, they are, you might not trust any Chelsea player apart from Cole Palmer, for example. You might not trust any Spurs defender because they concede goals. Yeah, they score a lot, so you go for attacking players. But the way you want to structure your team for game week 37, if you still have free hit, maybe if your team is good then for 38, because you've got more of your normal players, nobody that obviously doubles up, then maybe then. But I think what Sam just said made a lot of sense too.
Just quickly, we spoke about transfers in and what we did and didn't do last week. We noticed that you kept Pedro Porro. I couldn't believe it when he returned.
Come on, so Pedro, lucky. My boy.
Are you getting rid? Sam's spoken about the Spurs defence and then admitted that maybe she will keep. Said she was going to sell him, but then was like, actually, I might keep her, doggy. What are you thinking with Porro?
No, he's going this time for White. I just wanted to keep him another week, to be fair, before bringing White. And also, I only wanted to use one transfer in the last game week, yeah, which was a terrible one because it was obviously Foden, Maddison for Foden. So not that Maddison did that great, but Foden obviously was even worse. And I just wanted to roll the second one onto this week. So that's the only reason, really. But this time, White is going to come in for Pedro Porro.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned Ben White, because that leads us quite nicely onto our next section. We're going to focus in on Arsenal and Liverpool. Now, you may have noticed on the pod, we don't generally just focus in on teams like this. But when two teams are set to have a double in a game week or so's time, and they have such attractive doubles, and they've got the form to back it up, it feels remiss not to. It also feels like, Sam, we're going to walk into a double game week trap here and we're going to go, oh, they had all of the ingredients and it's going to be Emmanuel Dennis and all of those other disastrous doubles that we've had in the past.
Sadio Mane. Yeah.
Yes, Mane.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I captained Firmino that week, so we were all good. Surely not. Not with Arsenal and Liverpool, not with both of them in the title hunt. Surely this is going to be this is going to be
famous last words. We're going to be recording this bit, playing this bit back in a few weeks.
Gosh, I think for me, the interesting thing is how you invest in these two teams. Like Arsenal travelling up, absolutely. And I've spent most of the last two or three weeks going backwards and forwards on the attacking double up versus the defensive double up and the best way to go about having
it's got to be defensive,
player.
Hasn't it?
Yeah. The problem is, Kelly, that every week Arsenal keep a clean sheet and I'm like, great, thanks, Saliba. And then I look at my rank and go, that's taken another hit.
Hasn't it? Because everyone's doubled up by now. Like Ian did it a few weeks ago and George is going to do it. I really regret not doing it.
Yeah, I'm going to do it this week as well, because although I think that there's massive upside for players like Havertz, I would have to sell Son and then have to use a transfer to bring him back in again to make that change for the Spurs double in 35. So using two transfers to change out players that I actually want to keep longer term makes absolutely no sense at a point where the transfers are really important. And yes, there's massive potential upside for having an extra Arsenal attacker in there. But every single week, the clean sheets kill me. And it's so easily fixable to just have a second one, because you can go for Raya if you've got a goalkeeper issue. You can go for Gabriel. You can go for Ben White, who Jules mentioned. If you haven't already got Saliba, you can get him. Like, there's four options that you can go with in the Arsenal defence. And I just think you have to have two of them. I think that's become more clear over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, just a reminder with Arsenal's fixtures, they've got Villa at home in game week 33. Then they've got Wolves away and Chelsea at home in the double. Then after that, they've got Spurs away. So the North London derby's 35. They do also, between the Villa and Wolves game, by the way, have the second leg of that Champions League tie, which is so finely poised against Bayern Munich, of course. Jules, you mentioned that you're going to bring in Ben White. So you're going to have Ben White, William Saliba and Bukayo Saka as your three Arsenal. If you didn't have any Arsenal, would they be the best three Arsenal players, or who do you think are the premium three to have?
I think in terms of value for money, White is great. Saliba is, I think, with Virgil van Dijk, the best defender in the league by far. So again, I think you need to have him, although Gabriel is more of a threat on set pieces and cheaper. So you can be tempted, like you, Kels, for most of the season, preferring Gabriel to Saliba. Yeah. That's understandable. I think Saka is a must-have, of course. But then we mentioned Havertz already in amazing form. Nobody in the league has been involved in more goals than him since the mid-February, I think it is. Martin Odegaard, I mean, I think he's a candidate, he's a contender, simply because he's so instrumental in everything they do usually. But at times he will drop a bit deeper because they need him there for the build-up phase and leak him out all that play. So maybe Odegaard is slightly more risky. I wish that we still had Martinelli from last season, because he was so good at times and you could put him into your team and you knew there would be some sort of return at some point. Now that's not the case anymore. So for me, the three are White, Gabriel, Saliba and Saka. If you want to take more risk, because like Sam said, those are heavily owned. Havertz is not as much owned, Odegaard neither. So you can go with one of them to replace one of the two defenders that you have.
Yeah, Havertz is a really interesting one, isn't he, Sam? Because had we got more midfield slots, I think maybe he'd be even more popular.
Yeah, 10 attacking returns in the last 7 for him. Like, that is exactly the sort of player that you would want to invest in. I think the thing is, it goes back to that conversation that we were having before, and you have to weigh him up almost against players like Gabriel and like Ben White. And you have to kind of compare the two of them and go, what does my defence look like? And that's the other issue, is that for most of us, our defences are looking pretty shocking most weeks. There's not been a lot of clean sheets apart from at Arsenal. Whereas the midfielder slots, there's a lot more competition, I guess, for those slots. And so for me, Havertz is in fantastic form. Even having a player's return into the Arsenal team from injury hasn't really affected that. He's still playing really, really well. But Arsenal have only allowed 4 big chances this whole calendar year. That's 18 less than Man City have managed since the start of January. That's madness. That's absolutely mad. 4 big chances. I don't know. I just think that the double up defensively is essential. And I think you're going to have Saka, which sadly then rules out players like Havertz. You just have to get them in challenge instead.
And also, I think if there is some rotation made by Arteta for the Champions League, for example, for the Wolves game, let's say, because maybe of those three coming up, Villa, Wolves and Chelsea, it's the one that he feels maybe he can rotate. There's too many options going forward, attacking-wise, from Arsenal, because he can start Gabriel Jesus, Trossard and Reece Nelson, for example. Whereas defensively, Cedric is not going to start. I can give you a scoop. He's not going to start any single game between now and the end of the season. Okay, left back, maybe Kivior and Zinchenko, there's a match. But Gabriel and Saliba are not going to move at all unless there's an injury or a knock or something like that, which is not the case right now. So even if you're still debating, do I go more defensively or more attacking-wise in terms of Arsenal assets, I think just be fearful a little bit about the rotation that could happen, for me, far more likely in the attacking position than in the defensive positions.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Jules, just out of interest, if you were a Gabriel owner, like someone on this podcast, and you were going to bring in a second Arsenal defender, would you go Ben White or would you go William Saliba at this point?
You're asking for a friend?
Yeah, I know the friend quite well.
You know the friend quite well. Is he a friend that changed their mind a lot and is just a bit indecisive at times, yeah?
And leaves a wild card quite late, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Doesn't sleep much at night. Okay, yeah.
No, she doesn't.
So I think White has been outstanding recently, and I think he's more likely to bring attacking returns in the sense of...
Oh, that's painful for you because you love Saliba. That's why I wondered who you were going
to
say.
Yeah, but you've got Gabriel already. So it makes sense to have a right back and a centre back instead of two centre backs, because I think, like we said, Gabriel is more of a threat on set pieces for Arsenal, attacking set pieces. And then White gives you something on the right-hand side that can easily be an assist as well, or So I would go, if you already have Gabriel, if someone, you know, has already Gabriel that we know, I would advise go with Ben White. And also he's cheaper than Saliba.
My friend says thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to Liverpool then. They've got Palace at home in game week 33. Then their double is Fulham and Everton. Both of those away trips. Then in 35, they're also away, this time at West Ham. They also have to travel to Atalanta between those Palace and Fulham matches. Are we trebling up on Liverpool, Sam?
Oh, how is the question, Kelly, I think. Because... so you obviously have Salah, and it's always Darwin time, if you ask Jules. So
it's Darwin time for all of us now, isn't it?
I know, which is really weird. Always, yeah. So those two, fine. But then you look at the rest of the Liverpool team and you kind of go, okay, well, Alisson and Trent are back in training now. So what does that mean for Kelleher and Bradley? You've got Jota back in training now. So what does that mean for the midfielder slots? I think McAllister's a good pick, but... do you want to use one of your midfielder slots on him? I think it's really hard, the treble up on Liverpool. So I look at this and go, great, that's two lovely fixtures for Liverpool, a double game week. I want to have three. And I genuinely don't know how to get a third. I think Robertson or Virgil van Dijk are decent picks defensively because you know what you're going to get from them. But it's difficult to be able to afford them with the way that the rest of the team's budget has been distributed, particularly because you want to double up on Arsenal as well. So I might just end up with two Liverpool players, you know.
I think I'm in the same boat, though I would like to have three. So we're all on this podcast, Salah and Nunes owners. We're all pretty happy with them. Jules, are you going to be able to treble up?
I'm trebled up already. I've
got
Kelleher.
Bradley.
Yeah.
Oh,
no, okay, Kelleher in goal. Yeah. Probably maybe for the last week.
I was going to say, you're a bit worried.
I think he will. Yeah, I think he should play. Let's see against Atalanta what happens on Thursday night. So tonight, as we record the show, and then see what happens there. I think he might be okay for the weekend. After that, maybe not so much. I mean, Darwin time, of course. I mean, if I convince you to go on the Darwin bandwagon with me, I must have been really good. But he's only owned by 20% of the managers. Why is the rest of the world doing? Where are the other 80%? I mean, come
still on.
Still
on Watkins.
Yeah, well, maybe, but... for me, Darwin, especially since I, you know, picked him and brought that, the trust I showed him really changed this season. You have to be honest. You have to say here. And he will
at the end of the season, if Liverpool win the league, and you know they sit and do like reflective interviews and stuff,
yeah,
and they'll say who was key behind your season. He'll be like,
I already have
Julian
had a message
Leron.
From him saying thank you so much, brother. Or
he's
hermano,
not from
you know,
Paris.
We talk Spanish to each other because I'm fluent in Spanish as well, obviously. But he's, for me, he's the Liverpool player of the season ahead of Virgil. If Liverpool go and win the league, which is obviously possible, it would be my Premier League player of the season because I think he really has been that great. And I think more seriously now, Darwin and Salah, as you said, I think one thing you will know with Liverpool, they're going to score goals. That's for sure. So if you want and you can bring Luis Diaz in between Salah, Diaz and Darwin, you've got yourself covered. You know that very likely the goal is going to come from one of them three.
But Jules, getting Diaz in is really hard, isn't it? With
yeah,
only field
hard.
Slots.
Mm. No, I know it's hard, but it depends if you want to be a winner or not a winner. And I'm kidding. I know it's hard because of those midfield spots that we just mentioned. It's hard. It's hard for McAllister as well. It's hard for Havertz. We talked before. So maybe if you can't treble up or if you don't want Kelleher because there's the risk of Alisson coming back, just keep Salah and Darwin and that's enough. Or bring a Robertson or bring a Virgil, bring maybe a Kwanzaa even because I think with Konate still being... with a few niggles there and there, there might be a chance for Kwanzaa to actually play quite a lot between now and the end of the season.
When are you going to really worry about Kelleher, Jules?
Well, if he doesn't start against Atalanta on Thursday night, then I know he's not going to play at the weekend. If he still starts against Atalanta, I think there will be a chance that he's there on Sunday. After that, I think he will be pushing it.
Jules, can I clarify? You said Darwin Nunes player would be your Premier League player of the season.
If they win the league, yeah.
I feel like we didn't give that enough time. This probably isn't the podcast for it, but that's quite a rogue shout given the form of the likes of Phil Foden, no?
Well, if Liverpool win the title and are better than Manchester City, I think the player of the season, it's because Darwin would have been decisive, you would think, in this incredible title race. More than Foden, maybe. And in that case, I think he's in with the shot for sure. Foden has had a great season. Saka as well. There's others. Watkins, we said, in terms of double digit in goals and assists in the league, this is pretty special, to be fair. And if Villa finish fourth or fifth, it's an incredible season and he would have carried that team. I just think that Darwin has been such a key factor for Liverpool. And if they go and win this, I think it would be a lot down to him. So no, I think it would be my contender.
At Laurent Julien, if you want to continue that debate, because this is probably the wrong place to have that debate. It was just a rogue shout that I was sitting there processing.
What do you mean rogue? Come on.
Well, no, it's not rogue. It's like a whole, it opens up a whole other can of worms, doesn't it? And I just was processing it as you were saying the other stuff. And I was like, but I can't just let that go.
It would be your top three contenders, right?
Yes, yeah, 100%. I think, maybe I'm biased, but I just think Phil Foden has been decisive for Manchester City in
many games.
True as well. And he's been, when Kevin De Bruyne has been out, I just think he's thrived upon it. And maybe it's because he's English, I'm biased, I don't know.
No, but it's a fair point.
Like I said, not the podcast for this. It probably will even get cut out. It probably won't even make the edit, to be honest. But if it does, we hope you've enjoyed it. And like I said, you know where to continue that debate with Jules. Differential of the week time then. And actually, it Woo-hoo! Was a very good week, particularly good for Jules. He picked Havertz, who of course got 14 points against Brighton. Sam, you did still get a return though. And Bailey got an assist against Brentford, so got 5 points.
It's not bad.
It's just a classic. This is kind of feels like it's Jules' season all over. Sam does something good, but still Jules trumps her, isn't it? It's just like the problem we've both had this season. Like every time
planning,
I've thought I've had a good week.
Vision, you know.
Oh,
yeah. Go on then. Right, this is the point where we've deciphered because, by the way, obviously because of Jules joining midway through, these guys haven't even had a chance to discuss if they've got the same one. So
Jules, I've got a backup just in case.
In terms
so
of the full ranking for the full season, where are we at? Just to have a rough, if you have a rough idea, a few numbers.
It's close.
Is it close?
Very close. Yeah, Jules, you've had 139 points from your differential. Okay. Sam has had 133 though,
hey!
So it's not far.
Thank
the difference
you,
is, but Sam's actually picked more right differentials because she's had 16 players return. You've had 13. It just so happens that yours have been more explosive.
I've done better,
when they
mean,
have
yeah,
returns.
Yeah, okay.
It depends
no,
which way you look at it. I'd say that Sam's been more consistent throughout the season. Steady and slow wins the race and all that. Go on, Jules, go first then so that Sam can work out which one she's going to say.
Okay, so my one is Brian Mbeumo, Brentford. Come on. Every
Bingo.
Time you say that, this is not true. Until I see black and white on a piece of paper.
There he is.
I mean, not okay, a chance. Maybe. Sam is, for the purposes of the listener, Sam is holding up a screen that neither of us can read and we're both going, we can see.
I'll screenshot it to you both in our chat. So you can see.
Great minds think alike anyway.
Something
Sam.
Like that.
So
or idiots never differ either way.
Only owned by 6% of the managers so far, obviously because he's been injured and for a lot of the season. But he looked really, really sharp against Villa in game week 32. He scored. There was quite a good momentum in that Brentford front line, especially in the second half. Not so much in the first half, but when they scored the 3 goals, it was really good. It was fluid. And I like that. And I think he will be a very important player for them to stay up this season in the remaining games. So they don't have a double, of course, between now and the end of the season. But it's still a very good Sheffield United and Luton coming up for Brentford. This is where really it matters. And when it matters the most, your big players have to show up. That's why I think Mbeumo, 6.7 million, a massive differential. I think it's the right time. I know we have only those 5 very precious spots in midfield. But if you can find space for him, this could be the good week to bring him in.
I like it. You almost did it as like a rousing speech to him. You're on the borderline of begging him to return for you then, Sam.
Well, I'm going really rogue then this week because my backup was completely rogue. So I've got Cliver as my backup differential this
nice.
Week. So it's going to cost you 4.6 million. He's owned by 0.6% of the game. So he is a massive differential. He's facing Manchester United, but he's had back-to-back returns in game weeks 31 and 32. Depending upon what happens in the press conferences, obviously Semenyo and Tavernier will both potentially out for this weekend. That might see him playing in a more attacking role, which could actually be beneficial to him. And I think when you look at them over the course of the season, only those two guys and Solanke have had more attacking returns than Cliver has for Bournemouth. And in the last 2 games, he's had 5 attempts on goal, which is more than any other Bournemouth player. Coming up against Manchester United, who are 19th for shots faced this season in the league and 17th for expected goals conceded. So would expect Bournemouth to score, take a little bit of a cheeky punt on Cliver.
Okay, I like the way Jules went, nice, because he thought, yes, my differential's got a lot more chance of returning.
No, I did think about it.
Oh, yes,
of course you did. But my pick is better, but yeah.
Okay. Well, he was my first pick as well, to be fair.
All right, guys, calm down. Come on, transfers. Sam, who are you going for?
So I've got 2 transfers this week, because I rolled last week. Don't come at me, the rest of the Spurs fan community, but I'm going to sell you Doge for Gabriel this week.
No way. What, a Spurs player for an Arsenal player?
Yeah.
We know
Hate
your heart
myself.
Is changing. Your heart is changing.
God, it's definitely not.
All of the reasons we've said, it's kind of like literally everything we've said on this pod, it makes total sense, apart from if you're a Spurs fan.
Apart from if you're a Spurs fan. And I sat there quite a long time looking at Gabriel versus Ben White and trying to work out which one to bring in. And in the end, I'm going to go for Gabriel. He's had 26 shots in the box this season. The rest of the Arsenal defence combined have had 27. So just one less than everyone else. He's had 6 big chances as well. And again, the rest of the Arsenal defence have had 7. So he's the most attacking. Just going to go for both the centre-backs. I seem to have a thing about centre-backs this season. So why not? We'll add another one.
Jules, what about you?
Benny Blanco. It's Benny Blanco time.
Oh, Ben White.
Benny Blanco for the tan, for the socks, for the style, the elegance, you know, everything. It's Benny Blanco time for me.
Okay. And again, we probably don't need to discuss why, because we've discussed the merits of owning more than one Arsenal defender throughout this podcast. Okay, that is where we will leave it. Jules, thanks for your joining us. It's been lovely to have such a long time with you this morning.
Oh, sorry, guys. Thank you. I'll do better next week, I promise.
It's all right. It's all right. Maybe just don't fill that schedule quite as full, because right now you've got to go to another podcast recording, haven't you?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, the ESPN show and I coming.
Yes. Out. Okay. All right. No, cheeky plug there. Cut that out, producer Jesse.
I thought you were asking, so I was just
And Sam, you're off bowling.
I'm going bowling, yeah. I take the kids bowling. So they'll be most annoyed that I'm running late now, but we'll be fine. I'll take them to the arcade after. They'll be loving their lives.
I can also hear my daughter making a lot of noise next door, so I better go and relieve my other half. That's all we'll leave it, guys. Thank you, as always, for listening. Your deadline this week for game week 33 is 11 a.m. That's 90 minutes ahead of Newcastle versus Spurs. You can, of course, catch the fantasy show on Friday with Ian. The FPL Pod Mini League code is IB3WLK, and we'll be back next week. Before then, Sam and Praz will be back with you on Tuesday with Off the Bench. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you soon. Bye.